Non-Human Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the local seasonal and organic delights at Farmstar Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farmstar features artisan pizzas, salads, appetizers, and desserts with vegan, oh, magic to my ears, and gluten-free offerings, craft beer, and eclectic wines. Farmstar Pizza is open Monday through Friday for lunch, noon on Saturday and Sunday, and for dinner 7 nights a week with live music on Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday. They're located at 2359 The Esplanade. Visit farmstarpizza.com or like them on Facebook. And we're also brought to you by DigitalPath, providing high-speed internet and telephone for homes and businesses throughout the North State. Specializing in rural and hard-to-reach areas, DigitalPath is your locally owned option for internet with upgraded service plans and expanded coverage areas. Visit digitalpath.net or call toll-free at 1-800-676-PATH for more information. This is KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Non-Human Radio. Hello, welcome to Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal rights and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM or streaming online at kzfr.org. Or you can also find us on Facebook at Non-Human Radio. I'm Jeannie Trezino.
And I'm Danny Toms. Today, we're going to talk about the March-April issue of the Sierra Club magazine. Sierra Club, which is deeply divided, much like Donner Pass, and problematic on the topic of animal agriculture and the environment. We will, of course, wrap up with the vegan calendar of events.
All right. So let's talk about the March-April issue of this Sierra Club magazine, which is titled Cows Will Save the Planet or Not, You Choose. Yeah, let's talk about choice. So just as an aside, I'm a longtime member of the Sierra Club, both at the national level and also for our own Yahi chapter. I don't agree with everything the organization does. It has some really objectionable standards on hunting that I don't agree with, but I support them anyway. I think the Sierra Club has done a lot to protect the environment, to protect and reclaim wild spaces, and to create and enforce environmental laws. But I feel that the group as a whole seems to give a pass for the most part to animal agriculture and meat consumption, as well as to hunting and fishing.
I mean, just to jump in, I think as activists, we often find ourselves having to make compromises like this, to support them on one hand for the good they do and try to change the poor they do.
Yeah.
The proverb of don't let perfect be the enemy of the good.
Yeah,
I think it's important in all activism.
Sierra Club has so much clout at the legislative level, right? They are actually a dual nonprofit, right? They have a nonprofit for non-political activities, and then they do have a legislative arm. And actually some animal rights groups have that same kind of bifurcation, which lets you give them money to support political activities. So, our local chapter is very active and effective on political and regulatory issues, especially on fossil fuels. They jumped onto the oil tanker issue really big time, and we've actually managed to get some of those blocked. But I feel that even our local chapter is silent about animal agriculture and meat consumption and the options to that, such as veganism. Anyway, that said, I'll just say I've also been in the animal rights movement long enough to remember when big environmental groups and most environmental activists, right, the people in these groups, weren't even bothering to struggle with this issue. Right?
Yeah, I mean, it's great they're doing this article. It is also 2017, so it seems like it took them a while to get there. But
And, you know, and it may be that, you know, leadership is behind the curve, but the actual membership is more ahead of the curve. I don't know. Anyway.
Sounds like the United States.
So, anyway, and I, you know, I, in doing research for this story, I was looking into Sierra Club, and it was sort of surprising, but I was glad to see that the Sierra Club has a clear position on eating animals. It's in the food policy section of their website, and it says it's under bullet number 4 under food policy, and there's a link to it on our Facebook page for Non-Human Radio. And it reads, personal dietary choices that minimize or eliminate, I like that part, eliminate, meat and animal products should be encouraged due to their many benefits, including reducing greenhouse gas impacts, reducing water pollution, and reducing inhumane treatment of animals. So that sounds awesome, right?
Right, right.
That actually sounds similar to the American Dietetics Association position on vegan and vegetarian diets, and that they are safe and healthy for all stages of life, right? So it seems like choices that eliminate or minimize meat are safe and healthy for the environment and for greenhouse gas impacts. Anyway, so that sounds awesome. But then we get this curious essay, which is not actually published in the magazine itself. It was published online and is written by the editor-in-chief of the Sierra Club magazine. And his name is Jason Mark. And I thought I would give Danny just kind of give us a thumbnail of what that article was about. And then we'll be talking about quotes from it.
Oh, I might give you several fingernails. Yeah, Jason Mark wrote this article. I'm going to kind of go through it.
Yeah.
And let him, rather than fully summarizing, I'll kind of go through it and cherry pick some of the things he wrote. I mean, his article is titled "Toward a Moral Case for Meat Eating," and by consuming other animals, we can affirm our animal nature, drawing ourselves closer to the earth. So this is his position to some extent. And his article first kind of gives a little bit about his background. It goes into the technical animal rights philosophy of, Peter Singer and all the other smart philosophers. And then he attempts to offer sort of his own somewhat philosophical opinion on getting closer to our animal nature. So kind of let me start with a couple of things he said. So this is from Jason Mark's article. Quote, I once experimented with vegetarianism for a couple of years. When people asked my reason for foregoing meat, I told them I had no problem with killing animals. I didn't want to have to feed them. That line was too glib by half. So he does announce, he does recognize that it was glib, but really it's showing his motivations are more from the environmental side. And, one of the things he gets into here on the next page, this is what happens when you don't do your homeworks, kids, which has him wondering, can meat actually be a good thing? Can he make a moral case for eating animals?
Everyone wants meat to be a good thing.
Can I make a moral case for eating chocolate or wine? Well, in France, you drink wine and eat chocolate. You live forever, right? Let's see. If you spent any amount of time thinking about the morality of meat eating, you might have already come to this conclusion. And if you're like 97% of Americans, including Johnson from above, who I didn't read, you still eat meat. So isn't this blatant hypocrisy? Not necessarily, according to ethicist Paul Thompson, the author of From Field to Fork, Farm Ethics for Everyone. Moral ideas are exactly that, ideals, something we strive for. A Christian, for example, isn't necessarily a bad Christian just because she doesn't give away all of her worldly possessions to the poor. Charity doesn't require asceticism. So it's a bit of a... I'm trying to reserve commentary till I've gone through it, but that's...
So that's one of his points.
That's one of his points.
It's too much of an ideal. It's too idealistic to contemplate giving up all animal products, and we're foolish to try and encourage anyone else to do so, right? Yeah. That's kind of the gist.
I mean, you might as well just go, and Christians just, they don't even need to follow the Ten Commandments or the Five or Three. Just sort of, be nice. I think various religious authorities would disagree on that. So here's something he says directly. As Johnson noted, while it's almost impossible to find a moral argument in favor of killing animals, it's not at all hard to find compelling claims on the other side of the question. So what he then goes into here is, Jeremy Bentham, Peter Singer, giving, why you shouldn't eat animals and noting that there is no moral argument for eating animals. So he goes through some of that, and we've talked about their philosophical approach many times. So here's let's get to one of the more interesting things he says here. The question becomes, might the suffering that animals experience in the course of being sacrificed for human food contribute to some other social good? I think the answer is a conditional yes. By eating animals, we can remind ourselves of our animal natures. That recognition of our corporal reality, the fact that we are flesh and blood and bones and skin, each of us ever on the way to a very likely unpleasant end, can, like a few things, keep us connected to the living earth.
Right. So what's wrong with that is that, like, it tends to imply that if you don't eat animals, you have severed your connection with nature and with Mother Earth, right?
Yeah. We're trying to keep commentary to the end, but it's tough when you
reach. Encapsulate the points.
So. No, he gets actually into that, how, you know, well, vegetarians might feel in tune with the pull of photosynthesis. It's just not the same.
It's sort of like we're more in tune with broccoli than we are with, like, a deer or something, which is, again,
right. And
honestly, really.
And honestly, so, I mean, that's pretty much it. He's got 8 pages of this just saying this is really a pastoral primitivism argument that, you know, it's just sort of good to eat animals because it makes us think about it. And he gets into the whole, you know, if you're mindful of the animals you kill, and here's some guys I know that raise happy cows and then ship them 4 hours to Petaluma where they're happily killed in a slaughterhouse, even though I haven't actually been in the slaughterhouse. The guys say it's all really good.
Yeah, that was outstanding, and an outstanding statement. I'd never actually set foot in it or seen it firsthand.
Right.
But I take the recommendations of others because it's animal welfare.
But they're treated very well. And he also says, he goes on to say, well, I realize that this is not a sustainable form of agriculture right now, and that, you know, most people can't do it, but I'm lucky enough to live in the Bay Area of California and do it and eat my, you know, my local flesh. You know, maybe it's a step in the road for the, you know, first 30 million to be able to eat this way, and eventually 300 million. And, like, you know, if cows could fly, right? Like, there is no sustainability of local animal raising that would ever feed 300 million, like,
right.
Period, end, full stop. So
he'd rather stay on the path towards, like, this mythical sustainable animal agriculture,
right,
than work with what's at hand, which is to reduce or eliminate your animal product,
right,
intake, which is one of the policy
goals of the
organization, of the Sierra Club itself.
And this argument applies very well to upper middle class white people who can afford, you know, $15 hamburger and live within that area. But it's just such an elitist argument, in addition to being, you know, incorrect. So, here's another quote. Mindful meat eating forces us to remember that we too, despite all of our rational powers and moral capacities, will eventually pass away. So, if the argument is kill things to make yourself realize you're going to die someday, it's just not working for me.
I'm aware that I'm going to pass away, and I want to make the most of it, and I want to create the least amount of suffering as an ethical vegan.
Yeah, so I have more to say on that one, but I think Jeannie also wants to summarize another article.
Yeah, so if you just tuned in, you're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM. You're listening to Jeannie Trezino and Danny Toms on animal rights, veganism, and the curious essay featured in this month's Sierra Club magazine and online. So, that essay by Jason Marks,
editor, Mark,
who is the editor-in-chief of the Sierra Club magazine, drew a lot of negative comments online. It drew the attention of one of the board members of the Sierra Club, who wrote a really thoughtful post called Some Thoughts on Moral Meat Eating. His name is Steve Ma, and he's an activist. He's a born and bred activist. He has pretty good credentials. We can talk about the credentials of both these gentlemen at the end. But so it drew a lot of negative comments from the Sierra Club members. And some of those members were vegan, some were not, but all of them were upset with the confusion,
right,
in that essay, in the Steve Marks towards a moral, is it moral to eat meat line of thought. And so Steve Ma responded. He said that, which is what pointed me to the Sierra Club policy, that the Sierra Club does in fact have a clear policy to encourage personal dietary choices that minimize or eliminate meat and animal products, which I mentioned at the top of the show. And you know what? If you're a Sierra Club member, and you haven't absorbed that particular tenet of being an environmentalist, I think you should really consider what you're doing.
Yeah.
Right? Anyway, he went on to write that he was concerned that people will gloss over all these minutiae that were mentioned in the Steve Mark essay. His name is Steve Mark, not Jason. And instead use it to justify more meat eating. This is a big danger with these kinds of essays, right? They're like, yeah, I used to be vegetarian, but now I embrace eating meat because X, Y, and Z.
The circle of life.
Right?
Especially when he throws in, I don't know the proper term, but he's associating himself with all the strong philosophers who have actual great justifiable philosophy you could debate in philosophy school, and then he gets into his very vague pastoral argument.
So, in my experience, many non-vegans have a need to justify why they eat meat.
Right.
Very few people say that they eat meat simply and only because it tastes good. As in the Mark essay, they always feel a need to link their personal tastes and the consequences of the killing and eating of other animals. They have to link it to some greater purpose.
Right. And this, you know, and his argument about, you know, circle of life argument, he's not one of these guys who's, I only eat the meat that I kill, you know.
Right.
He's not even doing that. He's just saying somehow by eating stuff killed in a slaughterhouse in Petaluma, I feel closer to nature. I'm like, what?
Yes. We'll just circle back.
Yeah.
In the Marx article, he talks about how he sources his, actually, it's just pigs. It's just pork that he's eating from a very small, very humane pig farm in Nevada County. So it's kind of local to us.
So this article, though, I think, and Jeannie's going to continue, does a good job of rebutting this without getting into the trap of the stuff that was laid out.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, as we can see from Danny's points on the Marx article, that, you know, creating a positive moral argument for meat eating takes a lot of energy. It takes a lot of contortion, and there's really no other reason underlying meat eating other than we really like the taste that holds up under any criticism. So what Ma brought to light instead was the underlying motivations in all of our food choices, whether you're vegan or non-vegan, if you're a meat eater or not. And he starts with himself, and he himself is vegan. He calls himself plant-based. And the key point for me of his essay was this, and that's many vegans and vegetarians cite health concerns, environmental impacts, and animal cruelty as logical reasons for their dietary choices. But I know that folks with plant-based diets often have deeper underlying reasons. That they want to be alive and vibrant for their grandchildren. That's the health argument. They want to be good stewards for future generations. That's the underlying impact of an environmental argument. Or they want to live a life of peace and compassion, and that's the underlying compassion ethical argument. So he goes on to say, when more people can live into values like those, we will all be better off.
Right. Instead of moral arguments about eating animals making
moral
you feel closer to the earth, you know.
Or ecological food chain arguments we're born to be predators, we evolved to be predators.
Yeah, he had that in there too.
So he goes on to write, Steve Ma goes on to write, while many people think that we develop beliefs first and then act on those beliefs, folks who study human behavior have found that the opposite is true. First we act, and then we develop belief systems. So this harks back to the fact that most of us grew up eating meat. Most of us were fed meat by our parents, by our school systems. Mm-hmm. And so what he's saying and what researchers have found is that when that is your baseline, you're going to mentally build arguments to support those choices.
Right.
So that's why I think it's important, really important, what we feed our kids. And if we feed our kids junk, they're going to eat junk food. If we start feeding them better food, they're going to naturally gravitate to better food as they get older, too. So, going on with the Steve Ma article, he says, rather than show frightening graphs about links between climate change and animal agriculture, perhaps environmentalists, right? He's speaking right to environmentalists. Mm-hmm. He's not even saying Sierra Club, because it's already established Sierra Club has a policy that supports this. Perhaps environmentalists should simply host regular plant-based potlucks.
Right.
Theoretically, people's participation in those would reinforce a more eco-friendly dietary mindset, which would then reinforce that behavior even more. It's really hard to make changes if your peers are not making changes also. That's the power of the potluck sort of vibe on this paragraph.
That and, you know, good food. A lot of people will make the vegan food jokes. And you're like, well, what kind of good vegan? Well, I haven't had any, but it's a, you know, it's a fun joke to make, right?
So anyway, so personally, I love the power of the potluck. It brings people together. It builds community, and it lets us see diversity on our plate, as well as peers or other people who have made these same decisions. But even without a potluck, his point is well taken, that we should look, the underlying point is that we should look carefully at our values of family, environmental stewardship, and compassion. And that we all have these to some degree or other. We're all human. And we should ask whether killing and eating other animals is in alignment with those values.
Right.
Right. And if you take that, you don't have to do any backwards, like looking at, am I a carnivore? Am I an herbivore? Am I, you know, where do I fall in the food chain? Am I rooting into nature or not, right? You look into these values, and these values help you root into nature. These values of wanting to be there for your family will make you look at your food choices and choose healthier food choices.
Right, and I think we've seen, especially in the vegan sphere, how many vegan activists or vegans get into it for, you know, animal welfare, and then they start looking more intersectionally, and they become more into social justice.
Yep.
So, you know, aligning your values, you know, is something that sort of continues down that path. Whereas if you're kind of starting with this sort of specious justifications that he throws out, you're working backwards.
So I think we've kind of thrashed that through.
Yeah, I mean, it's a, you know, there's a lot wrong with that article. I don't know.
But I think it represents the thinking of a lot of people.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, that's it. And these are people, you know, like this guy's in charge of Sierra Club. And it's also kind of a shame where somebody can throw out that they're an environmentalist. They know the environmental impact. They know this cost, that cost. But I'm going to come up with this contrived explanation. Even if you then looked at that explanation and said, like, this is still a huge environmental impact. What are you talking about? Yeah.
All right. So, what do you think? Time for the calendar?
You manage the watch.
Okay. All right. I want to devote some time to the calendar. As folks may know, the Chico State This Way to Sustainability Conference is this weekend. This week. I haven't talked much about it because I actually took a look at their lineup of speakers, and there was only one talk that I could find that looked like a call for reduction in animal agriculture. And I'll just give him a shout out. His name is Ben Zuckerman. He's with the group called Californians for Population Stabilization. And here's the write-up. It's at tomorrow, Thursday, March 23rd at 1 p.m. in the BMU 312. And if you go to it, let me know what you thought. But here's who was the write-up for it. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to recognize that the biosphere is under assault by humans and by our domesticated animals, livestock and pets. More biomass now resides in cows than in any other terrestrial vertebrate species, to the detriment of the Amazon rainforest and lands of the American Southwest, as well as many other ecosystems. It was worth reading that write-up just for that fact alone, I didn't really realize that.
And does burning down the Amazon to grow cheap beef make Amazonians feel more connected to nature?
Right. And, you know, what they're growing in South America, what they're cutting down rainforests for, is not for grazing land. They're cutting it down to grow soybeans.
Right, to feed
cattle. Yeah, they're not making tofu with that.
So the jumping through hoops moral reasoning is also the jumping through hoops of just the food chain here.
Yeah. Anyway, I'll just go on because it was a good write-up. The worldwide livestock industry is also a principal contributor to anthropogenic greenhouse gas emissions. This presentation will consider the human population of the world, the U.S. and California, and how they are growing, and how overconsumption by billions of persons is playing havoc with the biosphere. Perhaps more importantly, the presentation will praise individual and communal consumption by Americans and what each of us can do to recognize our impacts. So
cool. Go.
So check that out. Yeah. Give me a write-up. This Saturday, we're going to experience the power of the potluck. From 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Chico Library Community Room at 1108 Sherman Avenue. The theme this week and is pie. We're a little late for 3:14, but we're gonna fly with it anyway. So pizza pie, apple pie, shepherd's pie, pot pie, anything circular. That's our theme. So if you're a healthier-minded person, I just want to give a shout-out to the Plant-Based Chico Group, which will have a special table for whole foods, plant-based foods. So you can find details and the schedule for the whole year at chicovegan.com. And then coming up on Thursday, April 6th, is the first of four of the CARES Reading Group, the Chico Animal Rights and Education Series. It's going to be held at the offices of the Center for Design Control in the Garden Walk Mall at 225 Main Street, from 7 to 8:30 p.m. So April 6th, 7 to 8:30 p.m. What are we reading? We are reading the best-selling book, What a Fish Knows, The Inner Lives of Our Underwater Cousins, by Jonathan Balcom. Balcom is going to be coming to Chico later in April, so this book is, we're doing the book club to get ready for his talk.
Awesome. It's always fun to visit the Garden Walk Mall. Also.
Yeah. So, and then also on Monday, April 24th, that is the date that Jonathan Balcom will be at Chico State to talk about fish sentience and his book, What a Fish Knows. And I'll just give a shout out, too, that the CARES Reading Group is going to be facilitated by the Chico State philosophy professor, Robert Jones, who you may remember was one of the co-founders of Nonhuman Radio way back when we were a baby show. So it'll be good to have him on board talking about that and helping people talk through it.
Robert's much smarter than I am.
Other things coming up on Saturday, June 3rd, is the Nevada City Vegan Food and Wine Festival. It's their first vegan fest, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturday itself, but they have events before and after. They're having book signings, cooking demos, vegan author readings, if you're familiar with Jasmine Singer, who's the host of the Our Hannah House podcast, and also is a staff writer at Veg News Magazine. She's going to be there with a book signing. And there'll be kids events and pop-up food vendors, vegan wine tastings, all sorts of good stuff. So 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., 225 Broad Street in Nevada City on Saturday, June 3rd. And then also that weekend at Animal Place, also in Grass Valley, Nevada County, we have the Farmed Animal Conference, which will be at Animal Place in Grass Valley. And that will be featuring Carol J. Adams, who's the author of The Sexual Politics of Eating Meat. She'll be the keynote speaker there. And also Ryan Shapiro, who will be talking about using the Freedom of Information Act to help out on animal issues. You can register for that at the farmanimalconference.org or go to Animal Place's website. Early bird registration ends on March 31st.
I think you just heard Carol J. Adams in Berkeley, right?
I did, yeah. She was at the Conscious Eating Conference, which was dedicated to spirituality. So she actually talked about Christianity and what it has to say for eating animals.
Interesting.
Yeah. And she had one little thing that she has said. People often ask her, well, you know, Jesus ate meat. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what would Jesus do? And she says, for thoughtful Christians, they need to ask themselves, not what would Jesus do, but what would Jesus do now?
Right.
What would he do now, knowing the scale and scope of the billions of animals that are involved with factory farming and that cruelty and horror? So,
yeah, go Jesus.
And, you know, go Carol Adams.
No.
She's like she's a philosopher and she's a devout Christian. So that's all that I have for the calendar. If you have an event or other news to share, send an email to chicovegan@gmail.com and tell me all about it. So we have one last bit of business to take care of, the animal rights quote of the week. Take it away, Danny.
All right, this is a good one. The animal rights quote of the week is a comment that Margie Beach, education coordinator at Animal Place Farmed Animal Sanctuary, posted to the Steve Mark Sierra Club article we just discussed on the moral case for eating meat. Margie simply wrote, quote, "I do not need to participate in a thoughtless, callous system to experience connection to nature. No one does."
Shout out to Margie Beach. She is an amazing writer, and that's just like, that's just a nice thumbnail crystallization of an animal rights ethic.
And one sentence shooting down, you know, 8 pages of sophistry.
Yep. Non-Human Radio is made possible through the generous contributions of KZFR listeners like you. Many thanks to Sue Hildebrand of The Real Issue and Bill Mash from Without a Roof for their engineering assistance and moral support. Wednesdays from 5 to 7 p.m. is one of the standout days of the week for local public affairs programming in the North State. Stay tuned for Sue's show, The Real Issue, coming up next.
You've been listening to Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM Chico. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions